is Paige Hattie with CBM Connect and Mobius Institute, and I am here today with Howard Penrose. Howard is the president of MotorDoc LLC and the 2018 chair of SMRP. He has over 35 years of electric motor testing, repair, and design experience, starting with a U.S. Navy motor repair job to advanced electric machinery design. Howard is also involved in legislation with the U.S. government regarding cybersecurity, infrastructure, energy, smart grid education, and safety. And that's what we're going to talk with Howard about today. Hi, Howard. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. So we're going to dive right in. So we know you as one of the leading voices in the world of motor testing, but your career has taken you far beyond that world. Throughout your journey, you've become heavily involved with advising U.S. politicians on issues of cybersecurity, which covers a host of different vulnerabilities in areas ranging from our personal computers, corporate networks, power grid issues, and much more. How did you come to be involved in advising U.S. government personnel?
Well, it's a bit of a long story, but basically some years back through the Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals, we initiated a government relations program, and it was spurred on by work I'd been doing since the early 1990s with the IEEE, or Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, United States Activities Board. So we started the government relations program with the intent of providing support for things like infrastructure on the Hill, and also making sure that we had a voice on the Hill. There's not, as a matter of fact, as we found out, there are no voices covering our industry, even though there's legislation that impacts us directly. So we were there for one of our first Hill visits, must have been about 4 years ago, and I met a gentleman at the Department of Homeland Security by the name of Chris Sheppes, who is since retired. But we sat and we were discussing just things related to cybersecurity and issues, which were his particular area. Having been a programmer in the past, I related to some of the things he was discussing. And he identified some attacks that had been going on within our industry that were directly related to, as a matter of fact, almost more commonly related to the maintenance organizations within companies being the leading cause of intrusion. So I started paying attention a little bit more, even just over the next few days, and I identified things like people plugging in network cards into secure SCADA systems in order to make it easier to identify things. The ability to turn on and turn off wind turbines by cell phone. Just a whole host of amazing things that you don't pay attention to, but realize that you have vulnerabilities. And as a result, I saw this as an issue, and when we brought it back to the Government Relations Committee and started looking around for who would have an interest, everybody kind of ran scared. Cyber, computer stuff and so on was a big concern. And that, of course, spiked my interest even more, because knowing that the maintenance organization the maintenance organization within our companies being one of the primary ways that hackers are accessing our systems from the outside, the lack of understanding of cyber systems became of interest. So I ended up pursuing that direction, and then later on started gaining more support. I believe it was right after I wrote an article for SMRP's Solutions Magazine that discussed the dangers of cybersecurity and Internet of Things devices. Prior to that time, the only time that cybersecurity was even mentioned in relation to the new IoT or IIoT or whatever we want to call it now, was one article in a magazine in Australia. every other one was articles about how you need to implement IoT devices now, but there was no discussion of strategy to protect your systems. And of course, as we all know, your system is literally is only as strong as the weakest point. So kind of the long answer is, or the shorter version of the answer is, it was something that became of concern. A series of events surrounding my business and some businesses I was familiar with happened at about the same time. I took it on as a serious issue. And as we go forward, I'll discuss some of the those adventures, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. So without naming names or risking the FBI paying you a visit, do you have any interesting stories from any of those high-level meetings that you've attended?
Okay, so we primarily participate by sitting in on the meetings. We are not, with a few exceptions, on the NIST, our National Institutes of Standards and Technology, we primarily participate as public. Just because of the amount of time required to invest in some of the frameworks they're working on related to cybersecurity and smart grid and smart cities. So we do get a chance to participate. And the very first one I attended because I happened to be in Maryland at the time, and the NIST headquarters for cyber is actually in Gaithersburg, Maryland. So it was about 15 or 20 minutes away from where I was. So it was a three-day discussion. They were closing out the framework for smart grid. And during that, we had interactions and discussed such things as smart cities and ways of taking experiences between them and getting that information out and how to also look at new thoughts of things like trustworthiness. So how trustworthy is your system, and understanding that things will be attacked and that some of those attacks will be successful. And then the other term was resilience, is how do you recover from the result of a successful attack? And they were talking about all of the new Internet of Things devices and how the framework was going to protect them. So on the third day, they asked for any questions from the three or four of us that were not part of the committee. And I had to ask the simple reliability-based question, and that was, okay, this is all great. Evaluating the trustworthiness of the devices for the smart grid up front is a great idea. But what happens when that item fails? And on the NIST side, the response was, well, of course, they'll replace it with what they took out and set it up the same way. And what I thought was particularly interesting, because we had CEOs, CFOs, chief operating officers of some of the large utilities in the room, their response was basically a look of horror. It was something that hadn't really been considered. They asked me to explain a bit further. And I said, well, basically when an item fails, even in that environment, what's the availability of that exact component? Is it obsolete? Is it something that can be used, repaired? Or do you end up getting something that will fit in place that might be by a third party an alternate manufacturer that you have no idea what the security is, you have no idea what the trustworthiness is, but it meets the budget, it's the lowest bid, and it goes in place. And basically the agreement was, yes, that's basically what would happen. That led to my being invited to speak as part of a panel several months later at NIST, addressing Department of Homeland Security, the White House, and several others. And this would have been about 2016. At that point, we were discussing, that led to a discussion of what and demonstrations of what happens when a vehicle, you know, your personal vehicle is hacked, and so on and so on and so on. And parallel to all of this, I was an IEEE webmaster contractor until this past year, and just the amount of work required to maintain the websites from being attacked and so on is just came too time consuming, so I walked away from the contract. But I've been in that contract for 10 years, and over the last 2 years, the number of times we've had to recover the website, regardless of the level of protection we put on them, was incredible. And most of it was due to errors from people within the organization that were uploading infected PDF files and so on. You'd think they were safe, but PDF is actually, I think it's the second or third largest potential phishing attack and launching platform for viruses. So that was that, and those were time consuming. We're talking about recovery was taking, you know, days and weeks at a time. So yeah, those are kind of some of the basic stories. The other stories that hit us kind of in a larger scheme, the ones that are more popular go back to the Target stores.
Mm-hmm.
And those started as a phishing attack that went out, and it came through a third-party HVAC vendor based out of Pennsylvania. And they were hit, and they thought they were protected. They had a freeware version of malware software, protection software, which they didn't realize did not automatically protect them from malware attacks. So they somebody there opened up a suspicious email. They're not quite sure how to recreate what happened, so nobody's sure exactly who did it. It launched what's called a worm into their system. Their accounting system with Target was used. So when they connected to Target with the accounting system, it launched onto their accounting system. Then once that occurred and the aggressors saw that they were in the system, they then started their research, which was looking at each of the administrators at Target, identifying one that had a weak password, using his password, and then launching a software written by a 17-year-old Russian onto all of the point of sale credit card systems. And then for the next 6 or 8 weeks, every card that was scanned on the infected systems was collected and sent along with other communications, encrypted communications, out. So the organization would receive communication directly from the infected systems in what they refer to as kind of the dark web. Basically, it was sent out from the infected systems as part of standard communication, split off and sent over to the aggressors, and then turned around and sold. You know, and that went on for months. And that's also a point where people started to learn that there's really nothing protecting us. The companies, by internal policies, will let you know if you've been hacked. There's really no requirement that they have to communicate to the public that they've been impacted. And this went on, and even up to last year when companies like Mondelez, who've lost years and years of data, production data, condition-based monitoring data, and everything else, due to Petya, which was denial of service attack, basically what's called ransomware. But what happened was the company that managed the email addresses that you would have been able to respond to pay the Bitcoin to get the code, that company shut down the email. And as a result, nobody had a way of contacting the aggressors and all the information was lost, in effect.
Wow.
So yeah, there's more and more and more. So I think what a few years ago, I think the biggest discussion we had in Department of Homeland Security just over a year ago was the Chinese smart bulbs that you would connect to your system, and it would gather your Wi-Fi information and send it back to the company or an aggressor over there. And then they would turn around and sell that information.
Wow.
So there's quite a few, and that was out in the public. You could buy them from hardware stores and everything else for a long time, including for a short time after they were detected. So there's a lot of scary things going on.
Be sure to check out part 2 of this interview about cyber intrusion with Howard Penrose coming up soon.